For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm John Henry Smith. With nearly half of Connecticut's over 8,000 COVID deaths since March 2020 coming in nursing homes, it's little wonder that just over 4,900 nursing home workers have tested positive for the coronavirus in that time. This weekend, Service Employees International Union District 1199 New England notified 33 state nursing homes that its 3,400 workers would be going on strike at 6 a.m. on May 14th if they can't strike a deal with state nursing home companies that significantly improves their working conditions and their compensation. Rob Burrill is president of SEIU District 1199. He joins us now. Rob, negotiations have been going on for a few weeks now. What made you and your leadership team decide late last week that you need to go ahead and start making hard and fast work stoppage plans?
This is a workforce that is overwhelmingly low wage, probably 80% female, and in terms of our membership, 80% black and brown. And they really were in the epicenter of the COVID-19 pandemic in Connecticut. You mentioned the deaths of residents and the thousands of illnesses of workers. Many of those workers were critically, critically ill. Folks who have had to have organs removed, people who have been out of work for over a year, people who brought the virus home to their family members, some of whom suffered fatalities, tragically, not workers themselves, but just people living in the same homes. And of course, 22 members of our union have lost their lives on the front line of the pandemic, overwhelmingly nursing home workers. And the budget that was put out by the state of Connecticut in February, the proposed budget for the next biennium, had nothing in raises for nursing home workers. And really, the workforce has been stretched absolutely beyond their breaking point in the last calendar year. Often they were working without any PPE whatsoever, in some cases having to wear trash bags instead of PPE into the month of July. So there's a tremendous amount of desperation, anger, and frustration.
How far apart is what the nursing home workers want and what the 64 facilities you're negotiating with are currently offering?
Yeah, we're quite far apart. What we're envisioning is a long-term care workers' bill of rights, which would establish a minimum standard of $20 an hour, health insurance that is affordable, instead of insurance that can cost people tens of thousands of dollars a year in out-of-pocket costs, and the ability to retire. So the long-term care workers, not just nursing home workers, but also group home workers and home care workers, no longer have to work into their 70s. So we are currently miles and miles apart, and the only way to get where we want to be is to have leadership from the governor and from the legislature so that Medicaid funding increases to the point where we're no longer creating poverty wage jobs with state Medicaid tax dollars.
Well, you say miles and miles. I mean, so you mentioned the $20 figure. What's their counteroffer?
I mean, currently, most nursing home workers are at $15 or below. So what that means is that staffing has really collapsed in many of the facilities because the minimum wage increase means that folks are making not much more than the minimum wage. And then you throw into that the public understanding of how dangerous nursing home work is with the COVID-19 virus. Staffing is really, you cannot attract people to work in these industries for $15 an hour. There's actually a tremendous amount of money in Connecticut right now that we could be using through Medicaid to raise standards, to raise levels of patient care and improve services. And that goes from the $3.5 billion rainy day funds to the $2.5 billion that under the President Biden's leadership was provided to the state. There are resources to help and to put the money where the hurt and the pain is. Otherwise, workers are desperate enough that they are willing to walk the picket line if they have to.
Well, you reference federal government help there. Governor Lamont has recently announced tens of millions of dollars of aid, hasn't he? Including like $500 direct payments to frontline staff. Does this move the needle at all for you and your membership?
Look, I mean, $500 for people who've seen in some cases dozens of residents pass away, who've dealt with a year of accumulated physical, mental, and emotional stress, who've lost some of their own family members. $500 is, is really, it's a nice gesture, but it doesn't get towards what workers are looking for.
Let me ask you this. Workers have in recent weeks picketed the Department of Public Health, the Department of Social Services, the State Office of Policy and Management. I think that's the governor's budget office. But your negotiations right now are with the private companies, aren't they? So why do you picket the state when you're currently negotiating with the facilities themselves?
Yeah, that's a great question. The overwhelming majority, probably 85% of the patients that are in nursing homes are paid for by Medicaid. So it's state and federal tax dollars that provide the funding that runs the skilled nursing facilities. They're privately operated, but they're publicly funded. And so the legislature determines what those levels of funding are by deciding how much they want to allocate through the Medicaid program. So that's why state agencies and elected officials have really the onus on them to do what is right by nursing home workers and nursing home residents.
So when you're at the negotiating table right now with, I believe, 64 different facilities, and yet they're purse strings are in some ways controlled by the state. Is it sort of like negotiating for a car or something with a middleman who doesn't have final say?
That's essentially what the situation is, right? That unless there is funding that is adequate to provide for higher wages, benefits, and staffing, it's virtually impossible for the operators to meet living wage standards for these very, very low-income workers.
To what degree is the state at the table right now with those 64 facilities?
Yeah, I mean, the state, it's really a legislative process. And, thus far, we are not seeing the movement from the governor that we hope to see. We are seeing some signs that the legislature is beginning to take the issue seriously. And not the least of which, because, with 33 nursing homes voting to strike, as you said, over 3,000 workers, the vote came back over 98% yes. There's an additional 10 nursing homes that are currently going to be beginning their voting that will be folded in. And then there's an additional 6 group home agencies representing over 2,000 people who do very, very similar work that have a similar set of problems that are currently taking strike votes, also upwards of 98%. So there really is a crisis across long-term care where Black, brown, and working-class white women just do not see the work and that they perform valued, even when they've really been in the eye of the storm during the COVID-19 pandemic, and frankly, long, long before that.
What happens to nursing home residents if a strike happens?
Well, the facilities will be required to hire replacement workers. We have to give each nursing home a 10-day notice to hire temporary scab replacement workers. It's really tragic that folks would be willing to do that work to stop other workers from trying to move ahead. We believe that every single healthcare worker in Connecticut deserves a living wage, and these union workers are really providing a heroic example of courage and vision for what is required in the wealthiest state, in the wealthiest country in the world, to provide livable wages for working class people.
So the focus right now is on a work stoppage, but on the other side of that coin, is it not true that workers in 51 facilities have been working without a contract? How long has that been going on, and what impact has that had?
For the most part, the contract expired on March 15th, and so what that means is that again, the conditions have been essentially stagnant in terms of wages and benefits, even when staffing is collapsing. And ultimately, if people are not paid a competitive wage, you can't attract enough staff, which means that the residents do not get the same level of attention and care that they need and they deserve.
Just a couple of cleanup questions. You mentioned the wearing of the trash bags, which we all saw the pictures coming out of the nursing homes, very shocking pictures. Has that situation gotten any better?
I mean, it's gotten better in the sense that people are not wearing trash bags, but we still see, folks having to wear PPE that is actually designed for single contact, single use, and having to wear that same PPE day after day, and in some cases week after week. The reason the standard went from single contact, single use to folks having to wear PPE for weeks and months was not because COVID-19 is any less contagious. It was because there was not enough available PPE to distribute to nursing home workers. So that was a difficult time. But certainly, you know, when folks go through that type of a crisis and lead with the type of courage and humanity and love that nursing home workers exhibited last year, there needs to be some recognition of that.
You mentioned the number of deaths. I've seen the state estimates say that 4 nursing home workers statewide have died of COVID.
And you say
22?
It's 22 members of our union. Of those, probably 16 or 17 were nursing home workers. Those state numbers, it's ludicrous. It's just absolutely ludicrous.
That sounds like that's been a point of conversation with you guys. That sounds like that's been a point of conversation internally, the difference between the numbers.
Let's just say that there is an emotional disconnect between folks within the administration and what workers have had to deal with. And again, there is a reality that this is a workforce that is predominantly Black, predominantly brown, predominantly female, not folks in our society who have a tremendous amount of power. And I think that we have seen the ways in which Black and brown lives, the suffering of folks from these communities just does not show up in the same way that sometimes other people's suffering does.
That is
part of the experience that people are the pain that these workers are carrying with them.
Have you specifically pointed out that difference in death estimates to the state? And what explanation do you get?
Yeah, we've not had much contact or responsiveness from the state on some of those issues, and dialogue around issues like that was not productive. But the reality that the idea that there were 2 fatalities in nursing homes from nursing home workers is beyond ludicrous. It would be funny if it was not so tragic.
Who has to make the decision? Is it Governor Lamont? What has to happen here in order to fix this?
Yeah, I mean, the governor, he can show real leadership and compassion and empathy in allocating dollars such that workers in these industries achieve a livable wage standard of $20 an hour with retirement and health insurance for all. As the executive officer of the state of Connecticut, he has ultimately the most authority to do what is right by these workers. And we're just a long way from livable wages and benefits that people can survive on.
Well, I was going to end on that, but I just got to ask this then. I mean, so if Governor Lamont is the one who can really fix this, then what do you guys, you and the 64 other, your group and the 64 other people at the negotiation table, what are y'all talking about then?
Well, of course, we want to make sure that there are other pieces of contracts that deal with, you know, dignity, respect, racial justice, et cetera, that need to be worked out. But the financial piece of things, for the most part, really does come down to the question of state funding.
And you talk about that progress being made. Where is that progress? What are the two sides making progress on specifically?
The most significant one is around racial justice. Look, all of us as Americans watched the country convulse last year in terms of our 400-year problem with white supremacy. And we watched a lot of people, George Floyd among them, not be able to breathe. But ultimately, if you're in a trash bag and you're in a nursing home and every single one of the workers that was in those photos was Black, and that was not because we chose, that was because where the problems with PPE were the most acute, was amongst urban nursing home facilities where we represent workers. What the workers understand is that fundamentally, it does not matter if you can't breathe because a police officer's knee is on your neck or because you're in a trash bag because nobody decided to prioritize getting you PPE. Okay? You are just as dead. And this is not a joke. It's not a game. It is life and death. That is the experience that our 4,000-plus nursing home members that are voting to strike experienced last year. And they are in this moment, in this hour, in this time, demanding one very simple thing, which is to be treated with the respect and the dignity of all human beings and to have their lives treated as if they matter, which is why we're talking about a long-term care workers' bill of rights that workers are willing to strike to achieve. And you know, we will get there or we won't, okay? But it's not going to be because we, as a union that represents workers who've sacrificed everything in some cases, because we didn't fight.
SEIU District 1199 President Rob Baril, thank you so much for weighing in on this.
Thank you.